Veterans Day is a time we're reminded of the service so many brave men and women give to our nation, the preservation of freedom, and the respect that these men and women deserve. Sadly, when you look at how veterans are treated the rest of the year by those who are charged with helping and caring for them, you quickly learn there are a lot of people with very short memories. Joining us now to discuss the promises that elected leaders and government organizations have made to our veterans and whether those promises are being kept is the Deputy Director of Concerned Veterans for America, John Burns. Thanks for being here today, John.
Well, thanks for having me on today, Chris. I really, really appreciate it.
Website for Concerned Veterans for America, cv4a.org. cv4a.org. We, of course, have that link at our homepage. Just as an overview, we'll get into some details as we talk here, but if you had to give a state of the state of veterans in America, what's one or two of the ideas that you'd want to impress upon people?
Well, you know, first of all, it is Veterans Day, so thank you to all my brothers and sisters, you know, with whom I've served over the past few decades. I am now fully retired out of the military, but as you know, I served in both the Marine Corps and in the Army as a National Guard soldier, deployed overseas multiple times. Thank you to everyone who served the country who's still with us on Veterans Day. It became very fashionable two decades ago at the beginning of the global war on terror to put a little yellow sticker on your car and say thank you for your service to everyone. And I think Americans remain, you know, very, very, very grateful to veterans, and I think that they really mean it in a very, very deep and humble way when they say thank you for your service. It would just be better if government policies, and you know, in some ways I hate to politicize Veterans Day, but it would be better if government policies really aligned with that sense of gratitude. Right now the average number of veteran suicides a day is 17 veterans or military service members taking their own lives. And I can't help think that if the federal government, which sends people overseas to fight these wars, could better align its healthcare incentives for these veterans, that we'd be losing fewer and fewer of my brothers and sisters every day.
A lot of people, too, believe that number 17 per day is a low figure for a variety of reasons. And I don't say this to disparage the work of others, but one of my great friends is the actress Jennifer O'Neill, and she does a great effort with equine therapy down at her farm in Nashville. Others are doing similar. You have these individuals who are stepping into roles where our federal government said they were going to be, and they've been trying to back out of those roles, which is disgusting to me.
It's insane. And again, you know, it's terrible to get too policy kind of focused and too policy ridden on a day that, you know, it's a sacred day, sacred history, you know, the end of World War One, where, you know, America's first major involvement in world affairs, you know, thousands of Americans lost their lives in that war, you know, millions through the whole 20th century. We celebrate the veterans who served on this day because of that historical nexus. But, you know, as you pointed out, there are not just equine therapy, which is a great, great way for veterans who suffer from PTSD or depression or substance abuse to kind of connect and refocus their attention and refocus their needs and get help. There are thousands of alternate therapies, some of which we know work, that are bottom up, right? They're tailor fitted to the veteran. Some veterans benefit best from eye movement therapy. Some veterans benefit most from intense workouts. Some veterans benefit from equine therapy. And the VA will only treat veterans one or two ways. You can be seen at a VA facility. You could be seen at a vet center, which are very, very helpful. But the VA is limiting the amount of community care that it's providing to veterans who have mental health needs. And, you know, community care should be available. I hear from providers like equine therapy organizations, like private providers, like nonprofit providers who are in the mental health space for veterans, and they're not getting referrals from the Department of Veterans Affairs for the community care programs that exist.
A lot of people don't realize, too, civilians, that there are care choices for the health of veterans. Think of a few listings, sort of like what we see now in more and more state school choice. What's seen as the better is going to basically get the business. And it seems like the VA is stepping their hand, feeling they're not confident in what they can do, so they want to eliminate or limit at least the alternatives so that more of the healthcare business comes to them, it sounds like, John.
Well, you know, it's a government organization. It's a bureaucracy, right? And you know, if history and social science tells us anything, it's that the primary mission of any bureaucracy, no matter what its stated mission is to at a minimum stay as large as it is. And in most cases, they seek growth. They want to enlarge their purview. They want to enlarge their organizational size. They want to enlarge their workforce. They want to, you know, enlarge their scope. And the VA would rather keep, you know, a large bureaucratic infrastructure that doesn't well provide for veterans' healthcare needs than right-size a smaller structure that gets veterans the care that they've earned, the care that they deserve, when and where they need it, when and where it helps them the most, when and where they choose to get it.
So John Burns, Deputy Director of Concerned Veterans for America, CV, the number 4A.org, their website, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. Your organization, the veterans, I think anyone who cares about others, celebrated when it was a bipartisan passing of, it's called the VA Mission Act. Held great promise, changes quickly implemented, as I just referred to a short time ago. A lot of those changes are being slowly, methodically limited more and more at a faster rate. Seems like the people who were such supporters of the VA Mission Act are forgetting what the mission of the act is supposed to be for.
It certainly does. And on top of that, I think you face serious headwinds from the current administration, the current Secretary for Veterans Affairs. Secretary McDonough has said time and time again that he doesn't know how to fund it, he doesn't know how to provide it, that he'd prefer that veterans get their care inside the VA, that's what the VA is for. But the law clearly stated that the VA should form access standards based on effective care, safe care, access based on drive times and wait times for veterans for both specialty care and primary care, and of course for mental health care as well. So veterans shouldn't have to drive for hours or shouldn't have to wait for weeks and weeks to get mental health care. And yet the average wait time for mental health care is well above the access standard at the VA, and they're just not assigning enough of these people out to community care providers. And the VA is you know, going against the regulations that they were told to write by the law. And you know, we've seen through FOIA requests that allies of Concerned Veterans for America have filed and lawsuits that they filed after the FOIA request, Freedom of Information Act requests, that the VA is just willfully ignoring these rules, both the internal rules and the law itself.
When it comes to our care for our veterans, and we always think long term, but just looking at it short term, is our transition services lacking? A lot of veterans come back to civilian life and, for all means and purposes, that they're lost emotionally, spiritually, whatever you want to call it. But that transition from military life back to civilian life, sure, it sounds easy, but it isn't for everyone, is it?
It truly isn't easy for everyone. And in some ways, I don't think it's easy for anyone. This is something that, you know, that is near and dear to my heart personally, not just because of the work I do, but as a veteran and as somebody, again, who knows a little bit about history. You know, American culture has just evolved, and a much smaller proportion of our society serves because of the professionalization of the Army and changes in who serves. You know, in many ways, the military has become a family business. You know, it's typical for someone today who's a young, you know, service member to have veterans in their immediate, you know, lineage, their father, their grandfather, at worst, an uncle. It's very unusual for somebody outside of that to serve, for somebody who doesn't have a first order relative serving. And at the same time, you know, folks who are college graduates who live in kind of the information culture, the urban East Coast, West Coast urban cultures, they're very, very, you know, discouraging for their children to go into the military. They don't see it as a valuable career path, is a valuable place to go. So America, in some ways, has never been more divided as a society. And, you know, if you think about, again, the history of warrior societies and the history of warfare and the history of soldiers, you know, in primitive societies, the whole tribe was the warrior culture, right? And the community was the military force all at the same time. As we've evolved and civilized, a lot of good things have happened, but we've had a deeper and deeper and deeper divide between the civilian and the military culture. And that creates emotional wounds, that creates moral wounds, that creates a deep misunderstanding of the two cultures. And yes, you know, I mean, I do this work every day, and I do wish that we were more understanding of each other, veteran to you know, civilians who's never served. And we just need to keep the conversation up. Just talking to you on a show like this, I think, is helpful. And Veterans Day is a good day for our civilian friends to remember, you know, people have made sacrifices. Even that veteran who never went overseas, he made opportunity cost sacrifices. He gave up chances to do other things, or she gave up chances to do other things in the world so that they could serve this country and that they could protect, you know, our freedom, our well-being, and our lives here back in the United States.
And for those who do serve and have served and come back to a civilian life, they come back with the promise that's been placed before them by those in quote-unquote leadership that they'll be cared for, they'll be taken care of, they'll be provided for when they have serious vital needs. And, well, as we said, those promises are not being kept, but it's voices like Concerned Veterans for America, and hopefully you, as one who cares for that veteran that you see at your local VFW hall, maybe at their next meal event, for example, which is a great time to sit down with the veteran and say, how's it going? Everything going good for you? Just the connection, it's really something as rudimentary as that, that can build the confidence, that can help someone who is facing a challenge to whatever degree it happens to be. And certainly when it comes to our veterans, every chance we have to show them the care that they're deserving of and worthy of, that's upon all of us to do. Learn more about the work of Concerned Veterans for America, the website cv4a.org. We've been talking with their Deputy Director, John Burns. John, thanks for the work that you do, the awareness you give. Thank you for your service in the past and even in the present with what you do now, for being here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Thanks for you know, celebrating Veterans Day with us. Thanks for sharing our message and encouraging, you know, your listeners, civilian and veteran alike, to celebrate veterans this weekend.